Now entering Nerdist.com.
Bienvenidos. Today we learned a podcast of knowledge. What's up, guys? Dan Casey here. Hope you're doing well today on this fine Monday morning, afternoon, evening, or even a Tuesday. I really don't know when you're listening to it, but I'm glad you're listening. No sponsor today, just some sweet, sweet factoids. And the fact that this is going to be the last time you're going to hear my voice this episode because, gasp, I was not there when this was recorded. And it's a huge bummer because today's guest is really fantastic. But first, I just want to thank Razzle and our guest host, Bria Grant, who you may remember from this self-same podcast. You've also seen her on Real Housewives of Horror, and you've seen her pretty much all over the place. She's a really fantastic, funny lady. And also, oh, her podcast, Mystic Party. So, guys, Bria stepped into guest host. Thank you very much. Enough about me, enough about them. Let's get to the details. Today, we have the writer and director of a fabulous new film, Listen Up, Philip, starring Jason Schwartzman, Elizabeth Moss, Kristen Ritter. It's a really fabulous film. Recommend you go see it. But first, listen to the podcast, because we have, without further ado, Today We Learn, number 61, with Alex Ross Perry.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Let's start this thing. Here we go. Thanks again for downloading and listening to another episode of Today We Learned. I am Razzle, and filling in for Dan this week is a previous guest. You've also seen her on the Real Housewives of Horror on Nerdist.com that just recently debuted, and you've maybe perhaps listened to her podcast, Mystic Party. Give a round of applause for Bria Grant.
Round of applause. That was my own round of applause. Thanks, guys. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for
and,
that.
And joining me and Bria, or Bria and I today in the studio, is writer, author, actor, director, multi-hyphenate, of most recently the great film that's just came out, Listen Up, Philip, Alex Ross Perry.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
I don't think I'm an author.
Writer. Well, I mean, you're a writer, right? Isn't
true.
That considered?
Yeah. Well, of
I
sorts.
Mean, you can author a screenplay, right?
You
Is
can,
that how it works?
You can author a screenplay, but I think that authors of real books would take offense to that, yes.
Do you hate being called a multi-hyphenate?
No. A couple years, you know how people say triple threat, double threat.
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather just be called a general threat.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
A generally threatening individual.
Yeah. Doesn't a triple threat usually include, like, dancing or something? Usually,
well, I think it could be anything.
Okay. I like the idea that you would come in and you're like, and I'm a dancer.
But I think anything hyphenated is a multi-hyphenate. Mm. You can't hyphenate one thing.
That's a really good point.
So it's sort of an oxymoron.
It is. A multi-hyphenate is... Maybe they mean there's multi-hyphens. I don't know.
But... Like, is a two hyphen, is that considered a multi hyphen, or is multi like multi, like more than two or three?
This is getting increasingly mathematic. Point is, I do a couple things on all my movies.
That's
and
good.
I do them all with equal earnestness.
Have you thought of ever doing anything weird, like I'm also going to be a gaffer today?
Sometimes you have to.
That's
I mean,
true.
On the movie I just shot last month, the crew was only 9 people.
Oh, wow.
And I was doing things on that I hadn't done since my first movie. I was unloading things, and I was climbing up on things to clamp lights to the ceiling.
Oh, there you go. All right.
I'm looking up. I feel like it was, I had it. Your the movie's pulled up here. Was it Queen something?
Is Queen
that
of Earth.
Queen of Earth. That's your new movie, right?
Yeah, we just shot it in September.
That's exciting. When does that come out?
I don't know. Next year at some point.
Really Are you cool. editing?
Yeah, we've been editing it since the editor started while we were still shooting, and I've been.
Oh, that's
since
great.
2 days after we wrapped.
I feel like that works really well when you're still shooting.
It's nice.
Yeah, because then you're like, oh, I don't have this, and you can get it done.
It's a benefit of removing one hyphen from my workload. I had to edit my first two movies myself because nobody else would.
Yeah.
And now I have an editor, so I finish shooting on a Sunday, and on Tuesday I can watch 35 minutes of the movie.
It's so exciting.
That's really cool. Now, Alex, as our listeners know, we like to start off each episode with the guest providing either a fun fact about themselves or something you learned recently. Is there anything you happen to learn or any fun facts about yourself?
Certainly no fun facts about myself, but I did recently learn that up until this season, every football game at the NFL was filmed on Super 16 millimeter film stock for the last 50 years.
Really?
With a handful of cameras on the ground at each game entirely for, I guess, some weekly show called NFL Today or something. And then for permanent archiving because, you know, in the digital transition, I shot all my movies on film. So it's something I, you know, claim to know a lot about.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they say, oh, movies aren't released on prints anymore, that's a big blow. Someone just told me that up until this year, every NFL game for decades has been shot by multiple cameras on 16 millimeter.
So you're saying they're down there like loading and unloading?
Yeah, supposedly. And they're just switching out mags every 10 minutes during a game.
Wow.
With a bunch of cameras just to have a proper archive because, you know, in the 80s, they probably didn't know how video could keep. So they just kept doing it.
That's
and
crazy.
As of this season, they abandoned shooting every football game on film.
That is so nuts.
No, I wonder if that's like, I wonder if that's just the inaction plays, or if that's also like the timeouts and stuff like that. Because somebody was telling me, I don't watch a lot of sports, but somebody was saying that if you like somebody's people have gone and edited down just the play time frame, and it's like an actual football game is only like 15 minutes or whatever. Like,
oh, wow.
In play.
Well, how long is a quarter? 10 minutes? 20?
12, I think.
Know, I've never,
you guys, we know nothing
like
about
that.
Sports.
I don't either.
We know nothing.
You know, I mean, even if you do that whole thing, that's only 50 minutes of filming. You know, five cameras.
I mean,
that's
and half
only
the time the timer's running down as you're lining up for plays and all that.
Yeah, so I don't know what they were filming, but apparently this has been a huge supplier. You know, Kodak has supplied a huge amount of film to this for decades, and this is now yet another channel that has abandoned shooting on film. So I learned that recently, and it kind of blew my mind.
I wonder if that's a big blow to, like, a Kodak or whoever was supplying that. I mean, because that must have been a huge source of income.
It's got to be a major client.
So
I learned that, and it sort of depressed me, but I found it fascinating as someone who, you know.
Do you shoot on Super 16? What do you shoot on?
Yeah, my first two movies were regular 16, and Listen Up, Philip, and Queen of Earth were both Super 16.
I directed a movie on Super 16, just to talk more about myself. Yeah.
Recently?
2 years ago.
Awesome. Well, you know, people always ask me this, and I hate it, but why, I mean, what, did you just want that because it was more authentic to what you like?
Yeah. And I think it's pretty.
That's the best answer I can ever give.
Yeah, but I'm always like, that. It's a weird answer. What is your answer? Your answer is like,
I don't know.
That's what
is
I say too.
My first movie was shot on film, so as far as I've never been on a film set where there's a digital camera, so as far as I know, that's the only way movies are made.
Yeah.
95% of movies I've ever seen in my life, if not higher than 95%, are shot on film, so it makes no sense to me to not do it.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking up 16 millimeter film here on Wikipedia here because I don't really know much about it. And then I'll ask both of you, since you guys are well-versed in the differences between standard and super. But 16 millimeter film, apparently RCA introduced the 16 millimeter sound movie projector in 1930, and they developed the sync sound 16 millimeter in 1933. And apparently Eastman Kodak introduced 16 millimeter film in 1923 as the less expensive alternate to the 35 millimeter. So apparently 16 millimeter film has been around since 1923 there.
23?
Yeah, 1923.
That's much older than I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
So what's the difference between, in your opinion and the expert opinion, versus like standard 16 versus super 16? Is there a benefit or what's the actual, like, I mean, what is your preference?
Right. Well, standard 16 has its benefits, but when you blow it up, it's incredibly grainy. It's not meant to be blown up. It's not shot with lenses that compress it so that when you digitally output it onto, you know, an HD hard drive, or then when you're projecting on a screen, it's sort of regular 16, you know, it just looks like something tiny blown up, like if you have like a video on your computer and you make it full screen. Whereas Super 16 has much more information in it and it can condense down and then be blown back up. No, like, you know, sometimes you hear about things, major things being shot on Super 16. Like a couple years ago, the HBO series The Pacific was shot on Super 16 for like a grainy vintage look.
Yeah.
Nothing at that level would ever be shot on regular 16. The movie Moonrise Kingdom was also shot on Super 16.
Oh, wow.
Like a handful of big independent movies are, and small movies like my own. Yeah. But regular 16, I don't think, has been employed in like anything other than a student or experimental context in quite a while.
Okay. Huh. Really cool. Now, Alex, it also says here you were raised in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania.
That is correct.
Where you also worked at a local television during high school. You worked at a news program.
Yeah, yeah.
The name, here's a couple fun facts about Bryn Mawr. The name Bryn Mawr means big hill in Welsh, and it takes its name from an estate near Dolgellau in North Wales. This was the farm of Roland Ellis, a Quaker who emigrated to Pennsylvania from Delegille in 1686. And he escaped there for religious persecution, and I guess that's how Bryn Mawr was founded there.
How many people live there?
In Bryn Mawr?
Yeah.
At least 100.
Also, some other notable people who've lived there, who've lived in Bryn Mawr, are Kat Dennings and Jane Mansfield, both actresses. Then Woodrow Wilson, the 20th president, is from Bryn Mawr.
How good of friends are you with Kat Dennings and Woodrow Wilson?
I always saw... There's a picture of her at the health food store in town.
Is it really?
Yeah.
And she's like, what, buying some quinoa or something?
No, no. It's like an article in Philadelphia Magazine with her, like, about her favorite local spots, and it's been hanging up there for a really long time.
Oh, that's cute.
That's the closest I've ever, gotten.
That's really cute.
Yeah. So to answer your question, not close whatsoever.
Okay. Do you hope one day that your photo will be up in that health food store?
I hope so, yeah. There's a bunch of stores I'd love to get photos hung up in, but I guess I need to talk about them in an article first.
Yeah, I guess that's what you have to do.
Or talk about them on a podcast. That's how I got all these Skittles.
Yeah.
You did come in and just start handing me bags of Skittles.
I'll give you some Skittles.
It is a lot. We've exploited... There's this brand of potato chip that's like a Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, Maryland local thing that's made sort of near Bryn Mawr called HERS.
Okay.
HERRS.
I don't know it.
And then my cinematographer, who's from Delaware, and I grew up eating, and you can't really get it anywhere. You can't get them in most places in New York. So in the last two movies where we were getting product placement, we were like, let's reach out to HERRS because we love it, and we can't get it, so we might as well have them ship it to us. And they're so, I mean, yeah, it's incredible. I mean, we got 1,000 bags.
Oh, no way. Oh, they were like open to it.
Yeah, and then, awesome. And they're prominently featured in both movies.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, we didn't just get it to eat. We put them in the movie as a pure declaration of love. So I get it. I get the Skittles thing.
That's HERRS, for those of you, I got their information pulled up here. HERRS is a Nottingham, Pennsylvania-based brand of potato chip and other snack foods. While their products are sold throughout the eastern United States and Canada, their stronghold is mid-Atlantic region. Mm. It was, and here's some brief history, I suppose, here. In 1946, James Herr, then 21 years old, purchased a small potato chip company in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and initial sales averaged approximately $30 a week. In 1958, the company introduced flavored potato chips, and in 1974, they switched to foil packaging from the traditional glass nine bags. HERRS.
Yeah, they're incredible.
The traditional what kind of bags?
The foil
like
packaging
foil-ish
now.
Kind of one.
But back in the day, I don't know if you guys remember, like even like Doritos and all that, they would have like the clear, the see-through glass, and that was like the plastic, and that was they decided most, you know, chip companies decided not to do that because it would like the sunlight and all that would deteriorate the
I thought they always did that
product.
Because you'd look in there and it'd be if it was like all mashed up, you wouldn't buy them. You know, like it was only like too. Yeah.
You definitely can't see into a bag of HERRS, but some of the packaging hasn't changed probably since 1963.
Yeah.
So
oh, really?
Those are the ones that we put in the movies. The ones that look the same as they did in the 80s and certainly beforehand.
Yeah. I feel like now this is just thinking about that guy buying it. Buying a potato chip company is not the best investment.
Limitless growth.
No, I think it's limited now because now I think people are going to be like not healthy and like that's not a good thing. Am I crazy? Maybe I'm crazy.
I don't know.
Maybe I live in LA. That's what's going
on. There's that pop chip that opened up. I mean, you could start a vegan chip company
Most chips are vegan. But now they're making other food into chips. Like you mentioned pop chips and I just saw somewhere like a pasta chip.
Pasta chip. I can't even wrap my head around
it. I saw them somewhere. They're just like taking other food and turning it into chips now, which seems to be like a real enterprising thing.
Like banana chips and kale chips and all the things that people are like, these are healthy.
Anything that can be compressed flat and made crispy has now become a chip. For me, I just want a bag of normal, old-fashioned potato chips.
Do you prefer the standard potato chip or barbecue potato chip?
HERRS barbecue are what I grew up eating and absolutely my favorite.
Yeah.
I think of the 1,000 mini bags we got on this recent shoot, 300 of them were barbecue. And they're in the edit room now.
So you're just sitting there. That's like every day you wake up and have breakfast of barbecue chips.
I just can't sit there eating them in the room. I mean, they're just so good.
They're so good.
And you see them so much in this new movie that, you know, it sort of makes me want some every time I see it. I think the favorite flavor... is HERRS Red Hots. Which are the rarest. They're really hard to find. So we got them sent for both movies again. And they kind of taste like Andy Capp hot fries.
Andy Capp hot fries. I haven't heard about those in so long.
Good. Yeah.
All great products as far as I'm concerned. It's like such a delicious flavor on a crispy
snack. That's like very East Coast
snack.
Too, I feel like. Because I'm from Michigan and we used to have like the Andy Capps. Yeah. It reminds me of like there was a small, in my town, Bay City, Michigan, there was a chip company called Made Right.
Mm.
And they had, you know, regular chips, and they had barbecue chips, and their barbecue chips were the best barbecue chips I've ever had. And then they ended up getting bought out by a company in Detroit, which is now known as Better Made, and they essentially took their same recipe, but it's very much small, like it's, I mean, a Michigan brand, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. It's hard to find anywhere else, but I'm definitely going to look into hers, and they're I might have to have some sent to me.
You'll never find them around here. Yeah. I mean, they're just such a specialized item.
Have them sent to me or something, because I love a good
barbecue
chip.
You're a chip connoisseur.
I mean, I'm not necessarily a chip connoisseur, but I love a good barbecue chip.
These are very good. The barbecue hers ones are a little bit sweet, which some people don't like.
No,
but
I love
them. I'm very fond of them.
Oh, I'm excited. I'm going to have to check them out. Now, you have a movie coming out. You directed a movie called Listen Up, Philip. It stars Jason Schwartzman. It's got Kristen Ritter, Elizabeth Moss, and that movie is also I haven't had a chance to watch it yet, but it's about an author, who's got a novel coming out and he wants to write another one, right?
Well, it's just that it sort of deals with the period leading up to when this book that's supposed to be a breakthrough is released.
Okay,
it's not about writer's block. It's not about the craft. It's just about the transition from working hard into being successful and how this guy deals with it, which is poorly.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I love the cast. And I, since it deals, you know, with authors, I have a couple fun facts about some random authors here. Johnny Cash's hit, A Boy Named Sue, was written by Shel Silverstein.
Wow. So,
yeah, I don't know if you guys knew that.
Did not.
Yep. Then Michael Crichton, however I can never remember
Crichton.
How to pronounce
it. Definitely Crichton.
Yeah. Author of Jurassic Park. He felt his literature professor at Harvard when he was going there was giving him unfair grades. So to prove it, he turned in a paper by George Orwell and received a B-.
Oh, that's really good. Yeah. That's smart. You can't do that anymore.
No.
Because now teachers just like Google stuff to see if you stole it.
Yeah.
He's a major hero.
He's a hero of yours?
I love him.
He's so good.
He's good, yeah.
I mean, his novels are all incredible.
Yeah, that's true.
And he directed a bunch of movies.
Did he? What did he direct?
He directed Westworld.
Yes.
He did do that. A movie called Coma with Michael Douglas and Jean-Vive Bujold. He directed a movie called Looker that's a really interesting sci-fi movie.
I had no idea about it.
He directed a movie called Runaway with Burt Reynolds that's kind of interesting.
Wow.
He directed like 8 movies, and they're all either very good or kind of good.
Wow, that's impressive.
He directed The Great Train Robbery, which is based on one of his own books.
Did he do anything crappy? Like, it's so weird when these people are like, oh, he wrote really good books and directed really good movies. Like, did he ever have failures?
Some of his later books are not so good, in my opinion, but he had a real hot streak. And then the movies he directed, except for Great Train Robbery, are all not based on his own work.
That's so crazy.
You know, sort of thematically linked to the things he explores. And then he just stopped.
Yeah, which is kind of funny, too, because, like, as good as, like, Westworld is the same. I mean, it's very, like, it's a Western Jurassic Park almost.
Yeah.
Which
is, and it was not his, you know, I don't know if he wrote it, but, you know, it seems so consistent with his sort of theme of science run amok.
I didn't realize, I'm looking at his IMDb here, and he wrote Twister. I didn't know he wrote Twister.
No, I didn't know that either.
That was a good one. Yeah, Westworld, they got HBO's coming out with they're redoing Westworld.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy who, you know, wrote very bizarre books that were ahead of their time and directed some pretty solid late 70s, early 80s movies. But Coma and Looker are two pretty interesting movies. If they were directed by, you know, like Brian De Palma, a lot of people would probably remember them very fondly. But to me, they're pretty consistent with movies of that era.
Yeah. Wow. We got Coma has Mike Douglas and Rip Torn in there. Mm. I'm going to have to check that out. Richard Doyle.
It's a medical thriller about organ harvesting.
Oh, wow. Ooh,
that sounds fun.
I'm sold right there. That's awesome. I'm going to have to check that out.
Crichton's an interesting guy.
He did a lot. Stephen King's kind of that guy, too, where it's like more and more I'm learning about things that, like, you never really, like, he didn't, like, he, like, Stephen King, if I remember correctly, he wrote the Running Man. Mm-hmm. Only he wrote it with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and, you know, only used a pseudonym and, you know, things like that. And it's really fascinating that, you know, a lot of these authors, a lot of people you think of, like, the one thing, you go to the Jurassic Park or, you know, a drama strain or whatever, but they actually have a whole portfolio of works that they've done.
Stephen King's directed some unsuccessful things as well. I believe he's tried to direct.
What did he do? What was that one of the monsters? With the machines that came alive.
The machines that came alive?
Stephen King, right?
I don't know.
The machines, and there was the goblin, the green goblin's head on that monster truck with Emilio Estevez.
I don't know what you're talking about. This sounds crazy. This sounds like a fever dream.
It was, I swear he directed it. Aristotle, do you know what I'm talking about?
Nope. No? This was a fever dream.
It was a real thing. I'm
this is the thing Stephen King directed, or it's based on one of his
Maximum
books?
Overdrive.
Oh. He directed,
yeah, he directed Maximum
Overdrive?
It was horrible.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really bad.
Do you hope one day people are talking about you like this in a podcast?
I hope so.
Like they're like, and he did this. That one was horrible. This one, pretty good.
And then he got full of himself and started like writing books,
right?
Instead of making movies,
he became an author.
Yeah. No, I think if you stick to the thing that you've sort of trained yourself to do, you probably won't get talked about like this, unless you're Crichton and you're good at writing books and directing movies.
Yeah. Well, then yeah, and then it's bonus.
Well, there's only one of him, and you know, he was taken very early from us.
Yeah.
Here's since it's approaching Halloween, this I always heard this growing up, you know, going trick-or-treating. Did you ever hear the wives tale about how like people would insert like razor blades into candy bars and stuff like that when
yes.
you were growing up?
Yes.
That is actually not, I mean, that's never been true. It was Ann Landers. It originated in the 1995 Ann Landers column, and her column basically said, in recent years, there have been reports of people with twisted minds putting razor blades and poison in taffy apples and Halloween candy. It is no longer safe to let your child eat treats that come from strangers. This vague warning was criticized for causing fear dishonestly, and there have actually been no documented cases of children receiving poison candy or razor blades in
there. So she's just trying to freak everybody out? She's like, you know what? Your children are not safe. Here's the most horrifying nightmare.
Yeah, Ann Landers was full of it.
What is a taffy apple? Is that like a caramel apple?
Must be.
I think it's like a, like instead of being caramel, it's almost like a sugary glazed of like you could have like the sour green or like the cherry apple.
Oh, yeah.
Like almost like melted sugar, toffee or taffy dipped in there. So it would be definitely have a little bit harder of a like a chew.
Is that report really only from 1995? I feel like I grew up hearing that.
Yeah, I agree.
But by the time that came out, I would have been like almost too old to enjoy it.
Yeah. I remember we had to when I was a kid, and this would have been before this, we had to take our candy out of the packages and pull them apart to make sure none of them had razor blades in them.
I feel like it may have been in a movie prior to that.
It could have been.
Instilled fear.
She could have very well gotten it from like one of those Urban Myths wives tales that spread it around. You know,
but the thing is, like, printed. Would you not see it? Like, you would see it.
Do you know how quickly you ate that candy?
She went home and inhaled all the candy.
Yeah, I would eat those little tiny bite-sized candies in one bite. There was a razor blade in there.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's probably true. That's a little, I mean, I feel like a razor blade's like this big and the candy's like that, but you'd see it. It'd like be sticking out the side.
You have to remember how easy it was to scare people in the 90s before information was easily debunked.
Yeah, before Snopes. Before Snopes, everything was
so much scarier.
No, I mean, I feel like, you know, this sort of thing tied into like Satan scare stuff.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And people's like willingness to just be totally afraid that strangers are going to harm you.
Did you say Satan scares?
Yeah.
I love Satan scares from the 90s.
Yeah, the 90s. So I think that's like, you know, I think that's like the correct historical term is like the Satan scare of the 90s.
And is it really?
Fueled by, you know, like Geraldo and exploitative daytime television sort of.
And then like office workers faxing and the copying machines of rumors like that. Like my dad would always bring home like stacks of like fake newspaper clippings that were passed along at his office about, you know, don't leave your brights on while you're driving or don't flash your brights.
Right, because then the Satanists will know that it's you. I remember that. That was like really important. Don't, if you flash your brights at a Satanist, they're going to follow you, and I don't know what they do to you then. But I was super scared of Satanists in the 90s when I was a kid. I thought it was the worst people you could run into.
There was a lot of hoopla about it.
I feel like that's the culture that sort of resulted in the West Memphis 3.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all like a real big thing at that time that this sort of razor blade in the candy is in some way reminiscent of.
Which is weird, because if you watch West Memphis 3 now, it's hard to, because I'm like, why were they scared of kids in black cloaks and stuff? Yeah. And then I was, oh, right, because at the time we were scared of kids in black cloaks, which seems crazy now.
It's such a, and that's another thing too, is it's like they felt that they were such a detriment, and like they were, be it sacrificing people who actually had powers or something, I don't know, they just were, it was such a, you know, they were so, like, just scared of anything to do with that or the occult.
Yeah, like maybe it was real. Yeah, like it was possibly real and like Satan was giving them powers. For sure. Agree.
Yeah. So here another fun fact about like authors and typing and all that here. The reason letters on our keyboards are arranged in the order that they are is because when Remington and Sons manufactured the first typewriter, they had problems with the more common letters jamming together and thus arranged the more common letters further apart from one another. The QWERTY design is based on a layout created for the Scholes and Glidden typewriter and sold to Remington in 1873. It became popular with the success of the Remington No. 2 in 1878 and remains in use on electronic keyboards due to the network effect of it. The QWERTY layout was devised to create and created in the early 1870s by Christopher Latham Scholes, a newspaper editor and printer who lived in Milwaukee. In October 1867, Scholes filed a patent and application for this writing machine he developed with the assistance of his friend Carlos Glidden, and that's... Yeah, so it was basically old typewriters. They had that the balls and the when you'd press on it, they'd have the letter and the lever shoot up and slam against the paper. And the more common letters that were getting used a lot, if two of them went up at the same time, it would jam. So they spaced them out and essentially separated all the more common letters so that way they wouldn't malfunction and get stuck together while they're typing, you know.
That makes sense.
Or, you know, typing letters or, you know, words.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
QWERTY, the way it's spelled, is a playable word in Scrabble.
Is it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Q-W-E-R-T-Y-U. It's a Q word.
It's a Q without Q-word. U. It's a rare Q with no U word, playable in Scrabble.
The one I always use is Qi, right? Q-I. Uh-huh. That's the only one I know.
This is I've never been able to play it because it requires a pretty bizarre combination of, you know, 6/7 of your hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is a legal word in the Scrabble dictionary.
Are you a Scrabbler? You
big Scrabbler? Huge.
Yes. Are you like ranked?
No, I've never competed, but okay. I really enjoy playing it. I play it all the time.
Like all the time, like every day?
Yeah, I do. I play it online with my friend every day.
Oh, online.
My friends and I in high school started a Scrabble club in our high school.
That's
and we play
adorable.
It together a lot, and now we, you know, one of them lives in San Francisco, I live in New York, and one of them lives in Philadelphia, and we have online games going
That's
all
awesome.
The time.
Like, literally all the time. That's amazing.
Yeah, like, two moves a day, like, one in the morning, one at night.
I'm so jealous of that. I didn't get my iPhone till late, and, till 2 years ago, the iPhone 5 was my first one. And by then, when I tried to play, like, Words with Friends or whatever,
play Words with Friends anymore.
Well, people still do, but they've been playing it for years, so they know all the tricks like QWERTY, and they know, like, Qi, and they know all these secret words, so I would, I would just get roasted in these games. So it's like I just give up because like playing normal Scrabble I used to be really good, but then you know people are, you know, they get so adept and you know you learn the tricks and the trade when you're, you know, playing it on your phone or playing it every day, mm-hmm. to where, you know, like QWERTY here, I looked it up in Scrabble, it's worth 21 points.
Oh wow.
And then in Words with Friends it's worth 20 points. That's a good chunk. Like if you can play that,
yeah,
that gives you a good bonus, let alone you play that on like a double letter or a triple word score.
I feel like people started cheating at Words with Friends, so I quit playing it.
I've never played it.
You never played it, and you're so into Scrabble.
Yeah, well, exactly.
So you're just that would be abandoning your Scrabble
I've got my game.
Okay, that's your game, and you're sticking to it.
Scrabble.
What was high school like being in a Scrabble club? Was that pretty awful?
Exactly what you would imagine.
All right. wondering.
Whatever you're picturing.
That's what it looked like?
Yeah, whatever you're picturing Scrabble club looking like for a bunch of guys in high school is probably pretty close to what it was.
Okay, all right, fair enough, good.
Apparently, Scrabble was invented. While we're talking about it, but Scrabble is based off of a prior game called Lexico that was developed in 1938. And then I'm looking here. It looks like in maybe 1948 it changed to Scrabble. I believe here. No, in 1980. Yeah. So in 1948 it was changed into Scrabble. Yeah. Scrabble's a fun game.
Great game.
It's a good game. Good game. Do you have any other ones you do? You just do Scrabble?
I really just play Scrabble. That's amazing. I like some of the newer, you know, like long form, more complicated games.
Ooh, like tabletop games or like,
Yeah, like, you know.
Settlers of Catan?
Well, that sort of thing, yes. Okay. That realm of games. My favorite is a game called Thurn in Texas.
Okay.
Ooh, I don't know it.
Which is a really neat game about the founding of postal routes throughout Europe.
That sounds pretty fun.
I'm going to check that out.
Where you sort of have different territories and you build a route. That's a very good game and it takes a while, but it's kind of...
Oh, you build a route. So is it a little bit like that train game or not? Like
yeah,
that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
You get city cards and you have to build a connecting route.
Oh,
I like that game a lot. And I also really like this game called Pandemic.
Oh, I love Pandemic.
Yeah. I was going to bring that up. Pandemic is such a fun game.
Yeah, these like I like games like this.
Yeah.
You know, tabletop games that take hour and a half.
Yeah.
Really hard to learn, but once you learn them, it's totally easy.
And there's a lot of, like, either strategy or team. Like, mm-hmm. Pandemic is your team.
Co-op
making
game.
Judgments, trying to beat the game.
Yes.
I just did Tabletop, that show or whatever, and we played this game called Legendary, and it was a long game, co-op, similar, but kind of, like, you work together, but it was more, like, card-based. I don't know. It was really good. It was another one I want to check out.
I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah.
So Thurn and Taxes is the game. And then Legendary. I'm going to check
Legendary. Check them out.
I love board games like this.
I do too. We play, my brother and I always play Betrayal at the House on Haunted Hill. I think that's what it is. It has like three prepositional phrases in it, but it's really fun. Yeah. It's another one where you like sort of like build, you literally build the board as you're going, and like it's really, so it's different every time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm going to check that out.
Do it.
Here's a fun fact about the Subway restaurant. The first shop opened on August 28th, 1965 in the city of Bridgeport, Connecticut. And it originally was advertised as Pete's Submarines, but that sounded too much like Pizza Marines, so they changed the name to Pete's Subway. Eventually it was shortened to Subway. A little fun fact about
that's a bummer if you like name your restaurant and then everybody's like Pizza Marines, Pizza like Marines. They don't understand what you're saying. That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
You don't have anything in there about the use of yoga mat things in there.
Oh, that I read that the other, like, what was that? That was another. I feel like that's a scare, though.
You know what? Like, I thought it was a scare, too. And then they did take that chemical out of whatever bread it was, because it was in, like, the flatbread. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is this the thing about how Subway bread is not real bread?
Yeah, it had, like, some chemical in it that is used in yoga mats. And it's a band in Europe. And then you're not going to get free Subway sandwiches after I'm talking about this. I'm sorry.
Like, Subway freaks me out anyways.
Yeah, it smells weird.
Like, you go in there and there's, like, you just see everything just sitting there and the oils, starting on the, I don't know.
Yeah, it's gross.
Yeah.
But then they did take it out. Like, so it couldn't have been that big of a scare. Yeah. Couldn't have been just people like with pitchforks. I think there was an actual problem.
Yeah,
it is odd how consistently good it smells outside Subways.
Yeah, that bread. I think they pipe the bread smell out. I don't think it's real.
Really? You think it's like a chemical to make it smell good in front of the store?
I think so. I feel the same way about Cinnabon. There's no way like a Cinnabon.
But Cinnabon, they're actually taking them out of the oven consistently. There always is an oven at a Cinnabon. But yeah. I guess they're always taking, I don't know, Subways just smell good and then taste not the way they smell.
Yeah, and then you go in, I don't feel like it smells as good once you're in there. So there's like a smell, it smells like Clorox.
It is very much like the movie popcorn smell. Like, you walk past it and it just smells so good. You want the Subway, but then you get inside or whatever.
It's horrible.
Yeah, they're not very good.
Movie popcorn is the worst. When you get like it, when you're like, this is going to be delicious, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Really? I've never had bad movie popcorn. I've never had any that I didn't immensely enjoy.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's great.
Have you ever put like M&M's or Milk Duds in the popcorn?
Yeah, that's
no,
good.
I like to keep it. You're describing what sounds like trail mix.
It really is true.
Yeah, no, I love it.
I am really into like the new things they have at movie theaters where you can pour and it makes it like sweet popcorn whatever.
Yeah, it's like the Orville Redenbacher, but they have like Cajun seasoning.
Yeah,
and, like,
those that stuff is good.
That's a very weird new trend. I don't quite know where that came from, but that was a major coup for whoever got that to be like purchased by a chain of movie theaters across the country.
That's a good point. That's a big, it's only in certain
jalapeno
ones.
Cheddar.
Yeah, totally. Jalapeno cheddar, and then there's like one that makes it sweet popcorn.
Oh, I like it basic, just with an inedible amount of salt.
Ugh.
And only like during the appropriate movie.
Oh, yeah, like what's the inappropriate movie?
I mean, like, of like recent, like, you know, you don't go see Gone Girl with a tub of popcorn, but like you do go for me, because like you kind of want to think about it, but like you do go see Guardians of the Galaxy with a tub of popcorn. Like, to me, it's just like, it's not actually about eating it. It's about like it augmenting whatever experience I'm having with that film.
Just so you know, you would hate me because I would go get a tub of popcorn for a Gone Girl. I would just get it.
I might if I needed it, but you know, like, sometimes I just feel like it's part of the, like, I decide before I get there, I'm like, oh, we're seeing this blockbuster tonight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to really snack because I'm going to definitely be eating popcorn.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
It'd be weird for me to eat popcorn during my own movie. I don't really know if like a small character drama is a popcorn movie.
But would you be bummed if someone was eating popcorn during your
movie? I'd be happy because I support it. But for me, like, you know, I sort of make up my mind beforehand, like, I remember kind of not eating for most of a day when I went to see Godzilla this summer because I was like, I can't not have popcorn during this movie.
You just got a giant popcorn for that.
Well, it's the definition of like a summer popcorn movie.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It will be better. It will be a better movie if I'm eating popcorn during it.
And was Godzilla a better movie if you were?
Yeah, it was. The experience was superlative.
Yeah.
because he's eating popcorn.
He's eating popcorn.
Obviously.
Yeah. I have. Did you eat? Did you see Birdman?
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet. I was wondering if that's a popcorn movie.
I doubt it.
I feel like it's not.
This is not a season for popcorn movies. No. They come back in December.
Yeah.
That's true.
Interstellar, I bet's a popcorn movie.
Yeah.
I bet that will be good with popcorn. The Hobbit will be a popcorn movie. But other than that, I think the year might be done for popcorn.
Did you like the other two Hobbits?
Yeah.
You like the first two Hobbits?
I mean, I've loved Lord of the Rings so much since I was a kid.
Okay, yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with it.
Okay, so even though, like, because I loved, same here, but the Hobbit ones, they just, for some reason, they added to, like, they weren't what Lord of the Rings was or even the Hobbit book was when I was a child to me.
Yeah.
So, I got that, the fan bias, but I'm going to try and go into this new one with trying turning that off now.
I thought the first one, didn't have a lot going on, but, like, it couldn't have mattered less. I still saw it twice in the theater. and the second one was kind of great.
Yeah.
With really, and the, you know,
Smaug
I just,
was, I mean, I love, yeah. The dragon, I'll see
the barrel escape dragon. Sequence was really exciting.
That was really good, yeah.
I mean, people complain about these movies being too long. Like, oh, there's three of them. There should have been, like, I wish there was 10. Like, like, I wish it was, like a TV show that came, like, there was 3 hours of it every December.
So would you say that was almost your favorite, fantasy books, or was that your favorite books growing up?
I was pretty into those books, yeah. I don't know if I would say they're my favorites, but, you rounded a corner where you started reading, bigger books that you can still understand when you're a teenager.
Yeah.
And, I really love them, and I've just sort of loved the mass embrace of them.
Yeah.
And I see nothing wrong with these movies.
Yeah.
I see people disliking them.
Yeah.
But I definitely don't. And I've, 100% eating popcorn when I see every one of them in IMAX 3D.
IMAX 3D. That's will be one. I definitely. I'm seeing Interstellar in IMAX. I don't think it's.
You
is,
have to.
Is it, it's in IMAX. It's not 3D, right? Yeah. Nolan doesn't subscribe to that.
Exactly.
No,
but no, the Hobbit movies in 3D have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that'll be in 3D. I didn't see the first one in 3D, but I will admit the second one in 3D. That bucket sequence. That's
great.
That was such a good sequence.
And also seeing the movie in IMAX 3D is like $24.
Yeah.
It's like as much as doing going to a concert or something.
Exactly.
But I saw it twice. It was totally worth it. Like once opening day, and then again like right when I was about to leave the IMAX theater.
That's speaking awesome. Of film, what's that? Speaking of film, 20 minutes ago, remember what's the thing about Nolan? He's like releasing Interstellar early in movies that theaters that'll show it on film or something.
Yeah, 2 days early.
Yeah,
that's a real thing.
Yeah. Which is like what theaters show it on film?
I don't know. It's on the website.
Okay, there's how many? Is it? I can't
like
be
200 across the country.
That's a lot.
Like 45, 70mm IMAX presentations,
enough.
And then like a handful of 35mm prints.
Enough that enough people will go watch it. To talk about how good it is
on film
to get the
2 days early.
DR, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it opens on a Friday as movies do, but then the film opens Wednesday, probably even Tuesday at midnight.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay. Yeah,
it's amazing to think about what kind of power you must have to be able to like actually just move the earth beneath your feet of the way movies are released in 2014.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about writing like a fantasy type of movie, like The Lord of the Rings or anything like that?
Well, I try not to write things that I don't think I can make.
Okay.
Just because, what's the point? Yeah. It takes a long time to write something, and if it's going to be like a great thing that's on my computer for 10 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love that stuff, but I love it because I don't really understand how it works.
Okay.
Like going to see a trilogy that adds up to, 9 or 10 hours, I love it, and I could watch it again and again. But because I don't actually understand the machinations of how you tell a story in that way and how you actually make a movie. I watch the special features and I do know how they're made, but it just sort of is a mystery to me. And I kind of like that about it. It would probably be really boring to spend 3 years making a movie.
Yeah.
That, two of it, I'm just like sitting in a small room looking at a computer screen as special effects are like... That would take all the magic out of it.
Yeah,
I do think that takes a special kind of person who's like, I'm going to make this. I'm going to spend 2 years in a room or however long doing special. Like that's.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so much green screen. Like that's so much work. It seems like I don't know.
Yeah, I'd rather it just be a mystery, something I can just go and enjoy.
And enjoy. Yeah. Cool. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
On that note, Alex, we'll wrap up here. This is the part of the episode where you sell yourself, you sell everything. Where can the listeners find you on the internet? Where can they watch your films? List your films. That's sell yourself to our audience. We got to they're everybody
in like a 1930s selling voice, like a carnival barker.
I think it's fairly clear at this point that my voice only has one. Well, Listen Up, Philip is a. Playing in theaters now. It opens Friday the 24th in Los Angeles and about 20 other theaters It's already playing in New York. It's on iTunes and Comcast On Demand, which I don't understand how it works, but people do. So I guess it's available wherever people have access to the internet, and also in about, you know, 20 theaters as of Friday the 24th, and then more theaters every week for the next couple of weeks.
Oh, wonderful.
And my other movie, the movie I made before it, is also on iTunes, which is called The Color Wheel, but I'd recommend watching Listen Up, Philip instead.
Wonderful.
Watch them both. Come on. Yeah. Don't sell yourself short.
If you only have time for one, I would say go for the new one.
Everyone has time for two movies.
Our listeners have lots of time.
Well, in that case, go for both.
Go for broke. Do it all.
Yeah. But yeah, it's out there, which is weird. You know, just the fact that it's on the internet now, and it's just this thing that we made, and now it's just zeros and ones.
That's exciting.
Somewhere on somebody's iTunes library.
That's exciting to go from, you know, conceiving the idea to having it out on everybody's potential, you know.
It's very strange.
They're on a queue. What did you do to celebrate?
So which part of it? Because, you know.
I was going to say the theater release, but the theater and VOD release.
You know, the theater release was a week after our premiere in New York. The movie premiered at Sundance in January and then had its New York premiere 2 weeks ago today. And then, you know, we did Q&As every day from the premiere until it opened. So the day that it opened, Friday, was actually fairly anticlimactic because it was so exhausting and there had been something every single day for 8 days
at
that point. So it was like, great, now the movie's finally out. But actually, so that it played at the New York Film Festival, which was a big deal for me. And, you know, because they only play like 20 movies, and it's like movies by heroes. Like it opened with Gone Girl.
Oh, wow.
Amazing. And Inherent Vice was the centerpiece, and it closed with Birdman.
Yeah.
And they made this T-shirt with the names of every director. So it's like David Fincher, Paul Thomas Anderson, me.
That's
and then
so
like
cool.
A bunch of other people, you know, who are all like light years ahead of where I go. Jean-Luc Godard's new film was playing there.
Wow.
And they gave me one of these shirts. And the night of the release, Friday night, I learned that day. I've been vegan for 12 years.
Oh, you're just talking about veganism before you walked in.
Oh, man. I don't know that much about it. I just know what I do and don't eat.
Okay.
But when I became vegan, Cinnamon Toast Crunch had milk in it. And the day the movie came out, I learned that Cinnamon Toast Crunch is now vegan, and it probably has been for 10 years.
I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that. And I know information like this.
I didn't know that either, and I saw a box of it in the office where we're editing. So the night the movie opened, I went home, put on my shirt with my name on it, and ate a bunch of
cinnamon toast. That's awesome.
And I was like, you know what? Like, the movie's out. It's been a long day. Because that day we did press from like noon to we had two Q&As. It ended at like midnight. So I just went home wearing my like special New York Film Festival T-shirt, eating bowl after bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
That's amazing. Awesome.
That's so
that
cool.
Sort of counts as a celebration.
Well, that's a huge celebration, especially because cereal is delicious.
Yeah,
cereal
and when you're eating it at like 12:30 at night,
it's the most delicious.
And it's a cereal that
it.
I grew up really liking that I haven't eaten in 13 years.
I don't know. I don't know if any I don't know any adults that eat cereal like actually in the morning. I feel like every adult I know is like eats it at night when they get home. And
I eat it in the morning.
It's like my cold weather, like in the summer, I like to have, you know, a fruit smoothie or something in the morning. But in like starting like December, I'll have cereal.
You have cereal in the morning.
Not like in the morning being like noon when I get hungry.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's my celebration.
That's awesome. Great.
Being reunited with a cereal that used to mean a lot to me. And bizarrely, it's much less sugary now.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, well, either that or I just don't remember what it used to taste like.
No,
but
you're probably right. I bet they took some of the sugar
out
of it.
Not nearly as sweet as I remember it tasting when I was younger.
Yeah, the same way they, like, you know, corn pops used to be called, like, sugar pops and, like, all that stuff. Yeah, like, they change that stuff and take sugar out. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So anyway, so there's something else I learned recently. That could have been another thing that I learned recently. Cinnamon Toast Crunch, since 2002, has become vegan.
That's okay,
so
there you go. That's
and Skittles. We were just talking about Skittles are now vegan.
Oh, really?
As of like 5 years ago, they changed.
Oh, see, I didn't know that either.
They changed the recipe. It doesn't have gelatin anymore.
When are they going to get around to making Starbursts?
Yeah.
You know why that's that is? I mean, this is for Hasidics.
Oh, is it? Is that why?
That's why they take a lot of animal products out of these things. That's why they took beef tallow out of Oreos like 10 years ago.
Yeah, we were telling Razzle that Oreos are vegan. He was shocked.
They have been for a while. Yeah. It's to not shut themselves off from a Hasidic market that can't.
Hasidic, not Hindu or anything like that?
Well, you know, maybe Hindu as well, but that probably constitutes a smaller portion of the snack buying market.
Maybe.
But, you know, it's so
that. But Hasidic people love their snacks.
I guess they do.
Do they?
You know, I don't know. I've certainly never interacted with one. But, you know, they don't want to not have their milky Oreos be available to be purchased by them. So they take all that stuff out.
Well,
that kind of surprises me that, like, Starbursts aren't.
They have gelatin.
Them,
as Skittles did.
Okay, so what's the gelatin? What's not vegan about the gelatin?
It's made from horse hooves and
animal bones and stuff.
Really?
They still use. Yeah, isn't that a weird, really weird backwards thing that they still do? Like, why?
Yeah, with all the chemicals that they can fabricate and, you know,
still
have to replicate.
Grind bones and do a gooey paste and turn it into candy.
Yeah.
It's very strange.
There's bones in your children's candy. That should be actually what we say for Halloween.
That's more horrifying.
Yeah, it really is.
That would scare kids away from eating candy more than saying there's a razor blade.
Yeah, I agree.
That's awesome. On that note, Alex, we want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody go see Listen Up Philip. Bria, what do you got? Sell yourself real quick.
I'm at Bria Grant on Twitter. Watch Real Housewives of Horror on Nerdist.com. We have new episodes for the next like 6 weeks coming out.
And she's got a podcast, Mystic Party.
Oh, yeah, Mystic Party, if you like comedy and horror and sci-fi.
Wonderful. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle2. You can follow Dan at Osteoferocious. You can follow...
He's not even here.
You can follow the podcast, TWL Podcast. Shoot us an email. Shoot us anything you want at todaywelearnedpodcast@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook, Today We Learned with Razzle and Dan. And as always, check your candy for razors. Thanks.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.